It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk about the hostility, harassment, and threats women face in the online world.
But first, we're talking about a post-game interview with a football player that's gotten a lot of people talking.
On Sunday, the Seattle Seahawks beat the San Francisco 49ers, sealing a trip to the Super Bowl. The game was hard-fought and exciting. But what really got people going was an interview with the player who made the game-winning play, Richard Sherman.
We have Greg Easterbrook with us now to talk about this emotionally charged interview and what it means that we're obsessing over it. Greg Easterbrook is a contributing editor of The Atlantic and author of The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America.
First, we'll play that interview for you. Here's Aaron Andrews interviewing Seattle Seahawks cornerback Richard Sherman.
The final play, take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm going to shut it for you real quick. L.O.B.
All right, before... And Joe, back over to you.
That rant is from Seattle Seahawks cornerback Richard Sherman. It came right after Sherman made a pretty dramatic play. Can you break down what happened during that play?
Well, it was a lovely play. He knocked down a pass that was what we call a stutter fade in NFL terminology talk, and the receiver was open. He took the inside position to force the quarterback to throw over him. He knocked it down, and he not only knocked it down, he knocked it to his own teammate, intercepting the ball, ending the game.
And not only that, he made sure the Seahawks are going to the Super Bowl, right?
Yes, it was the play that sealed the Seattle trip to the Super Bowl, which, of course, is not in New York. It's in New Jersey, so we're calling it the Jersey Bowl on the East Coast.
So this is not just an ordinary play. This is the kind of play that people are pumped about, the players and the fans and everybody who's there who's rooting for the Seahawks, right?
Oh, yeah, very exciting moment, especially if you were a supporter of that team. But there aren't that many times when the team that makes the Super Bowl makes it on the strength of one specific play. And Richard Sherman made that play.
Okay, so his remarks came right after this play, just to put it in context. And then reporter Aaron Andrews approaches him, talks to him about it, and we get the bit of audio that we just heard. That was Sunday. Why are people still talking about it?
Because this is America, and we're crazy about the NFL. That's why. I would have thought interest in this would have died out a few hours later. It's 3 days later, and it was on CNN and MSNBC last night. People are still fascinated by this. It's America. What more can I say?
Well, you're right. You wrote a piece about this, and you think that part of the reason people are so obsessed with the interview is that Sherman said what a lot of people want to say every day, but they can't. They want to crow that they're the best. And in people, there is a culture of talking smack when people compete. We don't see it on TV associated with professional sports. Why is the Muhammad Ali, I'm the number one thing kind of gone from sports on TV?
Yeah, there used to be a lot of bragging in sports. Muhammad Ali is the most familiar example, and I think there still is in prize fighting. Most professional sports now is corporate linked in some way. The NFL is a great sport, but it's a great sport that's a great medium for corporate advertising and is very closely linked to corporate America in many ways, beginning with the $25 million a year that Gatorade pays to make sure that it's Gatorade that's poured on the coach's head, not some other sports drink. So corporate America doesn't like emotion. This very visceral, he looks right into the camera and says, don't you ever talk about me in a very real and impulsive way. Most athletes are very carefully coached by media consultants to be cool and to act detached and to say all the right things. I thank my high school teachers. My opponents are the best. Thanks to God for my victory. Not to be emotional. He was emotional, and he'd kind of earned it. And I think people connected with it.
So, as a guy who was watching this on TV, like a lot of America was, what was your response when you heard him say that?
Oh, I just thought it was a little over the top. But he didn't hurt anybody. He didn't use any foul language. He was just a little bit over the top. If I were the Seattle coach, I would wish he hadn't said it exactly that way. But like I said, he didn't curse. He didn't say anything nasty.
And the conversation is continuing. There are people out there who are calling him villainous. Why do you think that is?
Well, as you know, Veronica, I've just published a book, The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America, which is about the American love affair, good and bad, with the sport and football. And the reason people are talking so much about this is that we're just total football addicts, And our drug is about to be taken away. There's only 2 weeks of it left. So we're talking about everything there is to talk about while there's still time.
Well, some of the reaction to that post-game interview, if you can call it an interview, I guess a rant is another word, but the reaction has been incredibly racist in some parts. How does race play into the conversation with what happened?
Well, you know, I've heard people say that the reactions are racist, but I have not myself heard any racist reactions. So I believe that this might have occurred, but I'm not positive what they're referring to.
Sherman said that he got responses that referenced the N-word, and he had said, I think it was in a piece I read on CNN, that he was especially disappointed because some of this stuff happened on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and it does seem as though there was some racist element to it. And let's just say that happened, you didn't see it, but what would you make of that?
Well, maybe, but I would say one of the good things about football is that football has created African-American heroes who are cheered for by white America as recently as a generation ago. That didn't occur, and now even white males in the old Confederacy states, even in South Boston, they cheer for black athletes. I think that's a great development. It only goes so far. 99.9% of African-Americans are not athletes, but as far as it goes, it's pretty good, and you know, otherwise, how do I know what he heard? So it's hard to speculate on what somebody else hears.
How normal is trash talk in football?
Sorry?
How normal is it for players to trash talk one another in football when they're on the field?
The trash talk to each other is constant. Some players are trash talkers. Some players are silent during the game. You're usually one or the other. And coaches generally coach players not to take the bait. If somebody else trash talks you, it's because they're trying to distract you from your own performance. And the best thing to do is just simply do it. No, don't reply. Don't say anything back. Don't try to out-talk them. Just act like they don't exist. And that, in fact, most players take that philosophy, at least at the NFL level. If you're down on field level where you can hear what's going on the field, you hear very little talking. But there are a few exceptions. Sherman's one. Michael Crabtree, the guy he got into it with, is one. There are a few guys in the NFL who are in sports, we would say a motor mouth, and the motor mouths tend to go on.
Now, the reporter who interviewed him, Aaron Andrews, she followed up on the first part of what he said and said, "Who was talking about you?" And you know, he says Crabtree was saying stuff. So, can we assume that those guys were kind of going at it right before the mic was turned on?
They might well have been. Yes, I mean, my guess is that they're going at it verbally with each other for the entire game. And when guys, you might not believe this, but when guys trash talk on the field, vulgarity is rare. Because if a referee certainly overheard the N-word being used, he would throw the flag regardless of who was the person using it. So trash talking is more about who's good and who's bad and who's going to cry and who's sorry and et cetera. And probably they were saying those things to each other the whole game. And at the end, it was Michael Crabtree who was crying.
Wow. So there's actually a code of morals for trash talk on the football field?
I wouldn't go all the way to morals. I just say nobody wants to get a flag. So there's things you can say and things that you can't say. And most players, although certainly not always, avoid saying the things that you'll get a flag for.
Well, what Sherman said, one thing that you write, and I think we can all agree on, is that he went off script. The post-game chat is generally supposed to be the really boring part of the game, right? So is it a way what he did, is it at all good for the sport?
I just think my bottom line on this would be that a week from now, no one will remember this. It's just interesting right now. If I was Pete Carroll, the coach of the Seahawks, I would wish he hadn't done that. You don't want anything at all that distracts your team from the purpose of winning the ultimate game in 10 days. And he went off script. Carroll would have much rather he said, you know, the 49ers are a great team. Crabtree's a great player. I just got my hand a little higher than his, and now we're going to New Jersey. If he'd said that, everybody would have been happy. But he's a human being. He said what he said.
But I guess if we're talking about interesting TV, if the NFL were a reality show, that would be the money scene where the guy really looks at the camera and says something unexpected.
Yeah, there was actually a little attempt to do this. And the USFL and the XFL, the two attempts over the last generation to create competitors to the NFL, tried to be more like that. They put microphones on people so you could hear them arguing, tried to start fights on the sideline, et cetera. And maybe there's a market for that, but I think there's a lot of objections to the way the NFL runs its finances and use of public money and to the kinds of examples it sets for young people. I detail them all my book, The King of Sports. But if you want to know, do they have a good business model? Yes, they have a great business model. And part of it involves athletes always being very polite in public.
How do you think Richard Sherman's post-game rant will affect the Super Bowl in a week and a half?
I don't think it'll have any effect at all. I mean, people might boo him when he runs out on the field, but that might not, even that, if it happens, it'll be over in 30 seconds.
Well, as you mentioned, Americans are about to have what you think is the number one drug, football, taken away. What do you think America's going to do in the months without the pigskin?
Well, unfortunately, the last 5 years of history say that as soon as the season is over, Americans start obsessing over the NFL draft, which comes 3 months later. Five straight years, the NFL draft, it's been in April, this year it's in May, but for five straight years, the NFL draft has been the highest-rated event on television in the month of April in the United States. And it isn't even football being played, it's just football being talked about is more popular than any crime drama or reality show or singing contest or anything else.
Why do you think Americans are so crazy for football?
Well, and the key thing is we're the only country that's crazy for gridiron style football. Football is the number one sport of the number one country in the world, and we're the only country where it's even played. It's played a little bit in Canada, but certainly nowhere else outside of Canada and the United States. And I think it's because only America could pull it off. Football is, of all team sports, it's the biggest, it's the most expensive, it's the loudest. It's the most complex. We're the country that went to the moon. We're the only country that could stage 1,000 football games. Well, if you include high school, is stage 20,000 football games per weekend every fall with the great complexity of football. We're the only country that can afford it. It's also the loudest sport. It's the nuttiest sport. It's the most superficial sport. Everything that's good and bad about the United States is wrapped up in that game, and that's why we're crazy about it.
Thanks so much for joining us, Greg.
Thank you, Veronica.
That was Greg Easterbrook, contributing editor of The Atlantic and author of The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America.